Good evening and welcome. It's KVC Arts. I'm David Fleming. Tonight I'll be speaking with Sarvan Mangit about Culebra guitars, making 3, 4, and 6-string cigar box guitars. We'll get a bit of process, history, and a bit of a demo as well. First, though, we have Lillian Vasquez in conversation with Carol Dixon with the Assistance League of San Bernardino and a rather spectacular event coming soon.
Welcome, Carol.
Thank you.
So let's talk about the Assistance League Headdress Ball. Tell us what the theme is.
Yes. So this year we're going to do the Cat in the Hat and some this and some that. So it'll be about Dr. Seuss, of course, and all of his beloved characters. And we've added a few others from children's literature as well.
Give a visual of what the event is. Full disclosure, I'm a part of the Assistance League as well. We have a matinee and an evening. What are they going to see on stage?
Yeah, we do. We have both the matinee and evening performances. And this time at the Headdress Ball, they're going to do more of a story. So you're going to actually see a flow through different storybooks. So beginning with the Cat in the Hat, of course, is our signature character. He may actually appear from time to time. You will sort of see him as he is a surprise guest popping up from here and there. We're also going to incorporate some other childhood favorites, things like Maurice Sendak's Where the Wild Things Are, and one of my favorites, Charlotte's Web. And of course, we've got to deal with the Grinch, so How the Grinch Stole Christmas will figure prominently as well. Cindy Lou Who and Horton Hears a Who. So we've got a lot of who's going on.
So it seems like it's a lot of literature, perfect for the Assistance League to support the school children of the San Bernardino community.
Yes. We support two philanthropies. The first is the Dr. Earl R. Crane Children's Dental Health Center. It was established in 1949, and we have a full-service dental center up on 6th Street in San Bernardino. So we invite children to come there who need dental care. We actually go into the schools and recruit for students who don't have insurance and who have dental problems, and oftentimes they're very severe. In addition to the dental care, we also provide clothing through a program called Operation School Bell. This was founded in 1983, and we do full school clothing from shoes and personal hygiene products, you know, head-to-toe outfits, and we go shopping with the kids, and it's really a lot of fun because it's very hands-on, and you can see the benefits immediately of what we've been raising money for.
Now, we know that the Assistance League is a national organization, and there are several chapters right here in the Inland Empire. And San Bernardino has chosen these two philanthropic projects to do. And the way we do that is by raising money through the Headdress Ball.
Yes, this is our biggest fundraiser. But the majority of the money that we raise is actually used to staff the dental center. So we have a full-time dentist. We have a dental assistant. And the members come in and out as well, just to try and help with the students and the children who actually come to the center. So it's a lot of work by volunteers, but for such an excellent cause.
As I mentioned, there are other assistance leagues in the community. Some of them have thrift stores. Some of them have, like we know, Redlands has a thrift store. I think Riverside or Temecula has a thrift store. Upland, there's a league
yes.
up there that has a thrift store. So this is really our way, and it's a lot of focus, and it's a lot of time. How many people are really involved in this entire effort? What do you think?
Well, we have two different types of organizations in San Bernardino, actually. We have about probably 35 active members that actually come and do most of the hands-on work. And after you've been in league for about 8 years, you graduate and you become a lay confrere. And our lay confrere ladies have been in league for some as long as 40 years. So this is a very long tradition for a lot of women in San Bernardino. There are over 200 chapters of the Assistance League all across the nation.
Okay.
And again, several that are local. Yes, we all do our specific charity programs.
this is also, I would say, it's a community event in that participation because we have dancers. It's like putting on a huge production, not a play, but it's a huge production. And we bring in the community not just to work behind the stage and build everything. Can you share kind of the whole team of who's involved?
We always choose from the community guest models is what we call them. So we'll have league people modeling as well as some Lakeland Frere ladies. But then from the community, just to kind of support their efforts, Shelley Bernack will be coming from Friends of Santa Claus, Inc. and Dignity Health and also the Unforgettables Foundation. Erlene Ferguson Dudley, who's one of our designers, who's going to turn model this year, and she's representing the San Bernardino Symphony. We have Kelly Volkomer, who's from the San Bernardino City Unified School District, and they are probably our biggest beneficiary of our services. So it's really nice to have her come and actually represent the school district. And then Chris McCurry is our fourth guest model, and she's from the American Legion, Rialto Post number 422.
Very good.
Yeah.
There's also designers and choreographers that are involved. How are they? Are they from the community, people we've worked with for many years?
They are. Lots of them have done this before. In fact, actually, we don't have any rookies this year. We have, for example, Bree and Mike Bentoncourt are going to be doing the Cat in the Hat. And our Cat in the Hat this year is Mindy Erickson, who is a member of Assistance League. Our Grinch is going to be handled by Eddie Pagdalau, also Gary Longoria, who has been doing this for a long time, who used to be your designer.
Yes.
So I remember you modeling a headdress at one time. So Marnie Reinhardt and Angela Wilson will be modeling for them. And then we have Kathy Hartley and Phyllis Huff and Ruth Sandlin as well, who are going to be our models this year.
My guest is Carol Dixon, co-chair of the Headdress Ball for the Assistance League of San Bernardino. Let's talk about let's face it, the biggest thing, the choreography is important where we have maybe volunteer dancers that participate in it. But the big thing that people are looking at is the headdress themselves. They really are the show.
They're spectacular,
they
yes.
They are. Where do the designers get the ideas and the vision for the different headdresses?
That's a great question. These people are so imaginative and they are so clever and creative. If you can picture in your mind a Vegas showgirl with her big tall headdress on, and now stretch it up another 10 feet off the top of her head, feathers and all. Some will have feathers because we have a bird that's represented in Gertrude McFuzz. One might be a very tall stovepipe hat that's decorated, of course, maybe for the cat. Where the wild things are, I think she's going to have monsters on her head. So if you can imagine, a 5'6" woman wearing something 10 feet off the top of her head. There have been times when we've had to watch the trusses that we use the lighting on because the trim is too low and people have to duck to get under the lights. So if you can imagine how huge that is, a lot of fun, really interesting. They have to keep their balance, so they have to be put together appropriately, and we have some really good engineering from the designers.
And let's talk a little bit about that. As you mentioned, I've had the wonderful opportunity to model a couple of times, but the model has to be in a corset.
Yes,
in the back
she
of
does.
The corset, there's a pocket where this bar goes from the bottom of your back all the way up your spine. And that's what's really holding up the headdress, right?
Yes,
and
that's what carries the weight. So it's a very strong apparatus. Most people think she's wearing this huge hat on her head, but it's actually on a helmet, and the helmet fits down over your head with a bar running down the back, and they're bent specifically to each model's back. And then they do slip into a very tightly laced corset that has a pocket. So the weight is actually being carried on their hips, interestingly enough. Of course, that's where you have the most strength, so they're able to walk and move. But it is interesting, if you move too much when you walk, if you shake those hips, then your head tends to go side to side. So you have to walk very straight and with very definite steps so you don't upset your headdress.
And I know, just in my personal experience as the model, I like the smaller headdresses so I can dance and move more. But let's face it, some of the big ones get the big wows and oohs and ahs from the crowd. Describe some of the materials that are used. I know there's feathers and
a lot of bling. A lot of anything that shines or sparkles. I've seen bird cages. I have seen houses built on top of their head using lightweight plastic materials, but painted so it looks like it's concrete. We've seen stacks of pinatas, you know, and pieces of paper mache. They use insulation foam sometimes in order to stick pipes in that come out. We've had giant fans. We've had, you know, huge books on people's heads. So it can be very interesting and just only limited by the designer's imagination. And I know you've worn some that are pretty tall, Lillian. I've seen a huge one on you.
Yeah.
When we did our Las Vegas spectacle.
Viva Las Vegas. I was supposed to be, I think, the Anne Margaret, and it was a monstrosity, and it did get a bunch of awes. But you can't really move. You can't do a whole lot of dancing, because when you move one direction and then you turn to move the other direction, it's still going the opposite
yeah,
direction,
it
so
does.
It's kind of confusing. Carol, you've been the creator of so many of these headdress balls. Where do you get the idea? Where did Cat in the Hat come from in your head?
Well, Cat in the Hat, actually, just to do that show as a theme, came from, it was actually Jennifer Hobbs' idea, and all of us started talking about it. So Jennifer Hobbs and Leah Hertz and Sherry Lopez, those are my co-chairs. The vision came, and it was like, we need to follow the stories. This year, intertwined with the music, will be a lot of spoken word, because we are going to read excerpts from the book. Some of them have been changed a little bit to fit what's happening with the action, but most of the numbers will actually tell a story. So that was what was unique and creative part of this year's planning.
And in telling the story, will you also be able to share with the audience there, the matinee and the evening, about the Earl R. Crane and Operation School Bell, and how do you weave that in?
Oh, you'll see. And we're going to be asking the donors to please put their cat in the hat. And so there will be a lot of hats circulating. The cats are actually little forms that you'll be writing donations on. And so we're hoping to be able to collect a lot of cats in our hats. We're going to stay with the books and the themes of the books, but always going back to children, obviously, and the care of children. The last number, actually, that we're going to do will really highlight both of our charities. It will speak to Operation School Bell and also to teeth and smiling, which is what we feel is our gift to children as a dental center.
Terrific. What's the music? Can you share any of the music?
Can I share any of the music?
Can you share any of the music that you might?
Well, for our Wild Things, you might imagine that's going to be incorporated with Wild Thing. We have a wonderful Bette Midler number, which is Too Many Fish in the Sea. That's a really fun, very upbeat number. We're using background music to I Feel Pretty for Gertrude McFuzz. If you know that story, it's about a little bird who had one droopy droop feather, and she wished that she had more. So when she gets the chance, she actually eats some wild berries, and she starts popping feathers out all over the place until she's too heavy. Mm. And then she can't fly anymore.
Be careful what you ask
for. Be careful what you wish for, exactly. We're doing Who songs, so Who Are You by The Who. If you remember in Dr. Seuss, there's a lot of characters from Whoville.
Right.
So we have about 20, almost 30 dancers that are going to be representing Who's. So they will be very interesting, yes. They're in Cindy Lou's number and, of course, the Grinch numbers.
And if our audience, we've tickled their fancy or intrigued them slightly about attending this event, where do they go and how do they learn more?
Yeah, if they want to check out our website, it's assistanceleague.org/San Bernardino, assistanceleague.org/San Bernardino, and they can get all the information on the times and the dates, and of course, April 27th, morning or evening, so you have a choice of two, so there's no excuse, and they can get more information about the tickets there.
Okay. Do you want to end on a phrase of a Cat in the Hat poem?
Okay.
No pressure, Carol. No
oh,
pressure.
Yeah. No pressure. We'll just come up with something. Well, let's see if I've got anything. So here's how we segue for one of them to kind of bring Charlotte's Web in and make it relate to Green Eggs and Ham. In the book Charlotte's Web, she spins a plan of her own to save Wilbur the pig so that when he was grown, he would not be slaughtered for ham and green eggs, and she accomplished this miracle by using her spider legs. After reading Charlotte's Web, I think you will agree. I'd never eat green eggs and ham. Nope, no siree.
Thank you, Carol.
Thank you.
My guest is Carol Dixon, co-chair of the Headdress Ball for the Assistance League of San Bernardino. It's the 58th annual signature Headdress Ball, Saturday, April 27th, and the information to get tickets is on their website.
Thank you.
And again, that website is assistanceleague.org/San Bernardino. That was KVCR's Lillian Vasquez. You're listening to KVCR. It's on 91.9 KVCR. Online at kvcrnews.org. I'm David Fleming. Up in just about 3 minutes, I'll be speaking with Sarvan Mangiat about Culebra guitars out of Upland, 3-, 4-, and 6-string cigar box guitars. Listening to KVCR. It's on 91.9 KVCR. Online at kvcrnews.org. I'm David Fleming. For the rest of the program now, we'll hear from Sarvan Mangiat, formerly the guitarist with Groove Session, who we had on for the 100th and 200th KVCRs. Now he's manufacturing cigar box guitars. The company is Culebra Guitars out of Upland. That's Sarvan playing in the background right now. And as we speak, if you want to check out some of these beautiful guitars, go to CulebraGuitars.com, C-U-L-E-B-R-A, guitars.com. So at some point you started making guitars with another company. We'll be speaking about Culebra Guitars in just a moment, but let's talk about how you ended up with any kind of company like this to begin with. I know that you'd seen cigar box guitars because you're just a guitarist extraordinaire. You come across these things, but how did you get hooked up with this other company?
Well, it's actually funny that you say that because up until I was gifted one, I hadn't seen one before. And I had been playing guitar for maybe 15 or 16 years, and I had never seen a cigar box guitar.
Oh, wow.
And first time I saw one was at a music festival, and the gentleman that I eventually worked with gifted me one. He just wanted to see me play it and see what I can come up with. And so I was gifted a 4-string. Groove Session wrote a couple tunes with it. We started touring with it, so I took it on the road, and for many years it was part of the act.
Wow. When we would see you with Groove Session, it was cool to see you pick up a variety of guitars.
Mm-hmm.
But then picking up that cigar box guitar, that's really cool. You see these things as novelties here and there, or you think they're novelties, but then you see somebody play it. So when you started working at this company, this was the first time you'd seen one. Is this the first time you ever tried to assemble anything together?
Yeah. I did not know what I was doing the first day.
Okay, wow.
And a cool thing about cigar box guitars, for a lot of builders, there's no rules behind how you build it. And so going into this, it was kind of just do your own thing. And there was a little bit of mechanics involved. I mean, a lot of mechanics involved in a guitar. But as far as building my own, there was kind of no rules. And so that was really fun to just go in there and make a stringed instrument. Because essentially what a cigar box guitar is, it's some wood, some strings, and a box for the body. Culebra Guitars takes that to the next level and builds more of a professional grade instrument with a lot more quality to it. But essentially, it is somewhat of a primitive stringed instrument.
And before we go further, I hope to bring this up time and time again, but it's CulebraGuitars.com.
Correct.
Simple as that. Okay, that's C-U-L-E-B-R-A, guitars.com. Sarvan, if you would talk us through just what makes a guitar, at least an electric guitar. There's guys out there, you know, they'll put a pickup on a shovel.
Uh-huh.
And that makes it work, or broomstick. I heard you mention even a piece of fence. What makes a guitar be able to be a guitar?
A guitar is essentially a stringed instrument, which is known as a chordophone. And basically, a guitar is a piece of string stretched to a certain amount of tension to when vibrated will resonate a tone, resonate
okay.
a note. And the electric guitar has a magnetic pickup, which receives the vibration of the string and transfers it through a cable into a power amplifier.
And that's what's called the pickup?
That's what's called the magnetic pickup, yes.
Okay, so then you can, as I mentioned, a shovel or you've mentioned a piece of fence, you could put a pickup on pretty much anything,
You
yes?
can. Yeah, absolutely. There's a documentary out there that Jack White shows.
Of the White Stripes.
Yeah, okay, Jack White okay. of the White Stripes. He takes a piece of fence and attaches two nails on each end, puts a pickup in the middle, and just wraps a string on it and tightens it up and is able to make a song.
You know? Okay. Wow. I want to hear both about process and history. We'll get a bit on both, but
When you were assembling these guitars for the first time, what were some things that you found rather, I guess, surprising? I mean, first of all, the fact that you could take Dad's old cigar box.
Right.
And instead of being used for poker chips, you could actually do something with this.
Right. Well, what was surprising was the tonal quality that you actually get out of the cigar box. It adds a lot. There's many types of boxes out there that are made of various materials, whether it's some like a cardboard material or actual wood, which I found that a lot of cigar boxes are made out of cedar, which is a tonal wood, and a lot of acoustic guitar makers make their guitars out of cedar.
Okay.
And so there's this type of natural resonance that happens when using a cigar box, and so that's kind of what we've taken into our production models at Culebra.
So when you're going after a certain type of wood, now this is, I suppose, more generally speaking for guitars, Of course, you would want maybe a hardwood for the neck, presumably, but the rest of it, I guess the body of it, that could really be affected as well.
Absolutely. Like you take an acoustic guitar, and just by changing the top of the acoustic from spruce to mahogany to cedar changes the whole tonal characteristic of the guitar.
Wow. Mm-hmm. And so is this what will make maybe a Fender sound so much better than... I guess I could say the Sears models.
Sure, just different. I wouldn't use the term better because some people could pick up a cheap guitar and make it sound like a very expensive guitar. So a lot of the tone does come from the individual and through their fingers. I've always believed that. But cigar boxes surprisingly make a very functional instrument.
Wow. So let's touch a little bit on history. And I've got questions about good boxes versus bad boxes.
Okay.
We'll get to that, but... Let's talk about cigar box guitars just in general. This is not new. This goes back to the early part of the mid-19th century.
Correct. The 1840s. 1840s to 1860s is when, as far as they've been dated.
So let's talk about why they were doing this and when it started. Do we have some story about the first guy who did it, anything like that?
You know what? I haven't read a story about the first guy who did it, but there is a picture dated back to 1876 of a gentleman playing a cigar box fiddle.
Mm.
And it was a painting that had the brand of Figaro, was the brand of the cigars, on the box in the picture, and you clearly read it. And so prior to 1840... cigars were transported in large crates and big boxes in groups of 100 or more. And then it wasn't until about the 1840s when cigar makers were finding that cigars transported in smaller boxes retained a better quality to the cigar. They retained moisture. The smaller cigar box acted as a humidor. Mm. And so eventually cigars were transported in bundles of 25 to 30. Then there became a surplus of these empty boxes.
Okay.
And so... musicians during the Depression era and those who lived in poverty that couldn't afford a real, quote-unquote, real instrument found that taking a broomstick and a cigar box and putting some nails together and a piece of fence or string or chicken wire or something, you know, was able to get some tones out of it.
Wow. This is because of money, because of financial ability on what you used to make your guitar.
Correct.
Glad you said the thing about the violin, because believe me, I had questions about that as well. So what did they use back then? I guess we weren't talking about plugging in at that point. So what did they use back then as far as making it heard better? If you picture an acoustic guitar, there's the hole in the center,
right,
which resonates the sound out of.
Correct.
And in some cases, we see on the cigar boxes, the hole is sort of in the upper left portion if you're facing it. What and why, and how did they do it back then?
Well, there's many designs to the cigar box guitar and how you can actually go about making it. I prefer mine with a magnetic pickup so I could plug it into an amp. But prior to the pickup, the box itself just acted as the resonator, like an acoustic. They did exactly what an acoustic guitar was, to have a sound hole right in the middle, and the box just amplified it. It was an instrument that really came to popularity with like jug bands back in the day. So like the washtub bass, the actual jug that they'd blow into, and the cigar box guitar. It was all together.
Could you put a pickup on a glass jug if you found a way to adhere it?
I think you can, yeah.
And get that...
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, well, we'll save that sidebar for another time. But you will usually see 3-string versions or 4-string versions.
Correct.
This seems to be more common than the 6-string. Is that right?
It's definitely a more the modern cigar box guitar. Traditionally, they had 1- and 2-string models.
Oh, okay.
The 1-string is called a diddly bow.
Diddly bow.
Yes, correct.
Okay. And now let's talk about different functionality then as far as the 1 versus... I was prepared to ask only about a 3 or 4, but now let's talk about a 1 versus 2, et cetera.
You know, adding strings definitely gives you more options to chords and different tones with low-end and high-end strings, the bass and treble parts of the guitar. I've seen guys that do incredible stuff with one-string guitars, especially if you use somewhat of a thicker gauge string to get more of that beefier, almost like a bass string.
Okay.
And they'll use effects like a fuzz pedal or a drive pedal to create just this massive wall of sound.
Wow, nice. That's massive. We're talking about cigar box guitars and this massive wall of sound. It's like, I don't see Gene Simmons with a stack of Marshall amps with but cigar box bass in his case. So how is spacing affected, by the way? You know, that is to say, we pick up or look at a classical guitar and the spacing between the strings, significantly more space. How is this affected on a cigar box where you're doing three or four or whatever?
Because the instrument's fretted, at least the ones we make have all frets, it's just like playing a regular guitar. The spacing is a little different and there's a little bit of a learning curve when you actually play it. But as far as the notes that you're able to get out, it's all the same.
Okay.
It's the same scale as a full-length guitar, actually.
Okay. Well, then let's look at then specifically three-string versus a four-string.
Okay.
You've brought with you a three-string, a four-string, and a six-string. I mean, you can tune three strings a variety of ways, but there's often a repetition like this ADA, for example.
Correct. This one I have in GDG.
GDG. So let's talk about why that is.
A lot of guys would play slide guitar on these instruments.
Okay.
And that was due to the fact that they couldn't get the action low enough to really be able to fret the guitar with good intonation and it sounding like it's in tune. So slide guitar is very popular with these instruments. And so open tunings is really popular with slide guitar because with the slide across all strings, you want it to make it sound like a chord.
Okay.
And so the three string gives you this chord without really it being major or minor. So you have this G, D, G. You have an octave and then the fifth in the middle, which gives it this kind of raw bluesy sound naturally. I mean, you could add the third in there if you fret it. Then here's the minor, which is kind of that darker tone. But open, if I'm playing it open now, it doesn't really have a major or minor quality to it. So if you were to take a slide guitar across the strings,
so in this case with GDG, or I suppose with any of that kind of tuning, are you able then to, I suppose, accompany yourself with hitting a bass note up above and then playing down below? Is that another advantage to
Absolutely.
This type of tuning?
I mean, a lot of guys that play six-string guitar do that kind of style where they'll play the bass note for themselves and play a chord on top of it.
But they have absurdly, abnormally long thumbs.
They go over it. You know, that's what's great about these instruments is that the necks are really smaller because they only need to accommodate three strings. So.
Oh, so little people like us could actually do that thumb
wrap. Small, stubby fingers.
Okay, wow. Listening to KVCR, it's on 91.9 KVCR, online at kvcrnews.org. I'm David Fleming. Let's go back now to Sarvin Mangiat with Culebra Guitars. CulebraGuitars.com for more. Based out of Upland, they make 3-, 4-, and 6-string cigar box guitars, and they do custom work as well. More on that in just a bit. The guitars that you manufacture. Let's talk about the difference between these one-of-a-kind pieces versus the factory model.
Okay. The one-of-a-kind pieces, we go out to different cigar stores, and a lot of them are just throwing these good boxes away, perfectly good boxes. And so we go in and purchase empty boxes from them. I know nothing about cigars, but the boxes I do know about. And so I go out and look for a box that will be the right length, the right size, maybe the right wood and material. And we will make a guitar out of it. And because we can't really duplicate the box because it's from a different manufacturer, we consider those one-of-a-kind pieces.
Gotcha.
And so our production models, we've basically replicated the exact measurements of one of our favorite boxes, use the same wood that they use, and are able to make our own version of a cigar box guitar.
Okay. And now, since these ones are made in-house, I wonder, I'm seeing a lot of $400, $500, $600 models. If we go to, again, that's culebraguitars.com, there's a gallery section. And yeah, so this seems to be the price range that I'm seeing. Is that specifically for the one-of-a-kind type ones as opposed to the factory model that you're replicating? Is that a little bit more affordable? Are there different models that are more affordable for beginners? Let's go back to that Sears model versus the Fender.
Yeah, that's definitely something that Culebra Guitars wants to do, is create a more affordable beginner type model, because like I said, with the smaller neck, it's a little more attractive to kids with smaller hands, and we are working on that line. Currently, what we have available is more geared towards like a intermediate to professional musician.
Mm. That is certainly, I would think, the audience that you'll be attracting is those who are already playing a guitar. And now let's go to something else, make this even more special somehow. You think these are easier to learn on? You know, and that's interesting to state, I suppose, because we're talking about three strings versus six strings for a traditional, but you think it would be easier to learn how to play, if not to play properly, to play a song?
You know, I think if this was your first stringed instrument you've ever touched, mm-hmm. there is an ease of playability to it. It's smaller, it's lighter weight, but there are not a lot of resources out there as far as learning cover songs. The six-string guitar is obviously the most popular of the guitar world, so there's just so many resources with tablature and chord books for six strings. What Culebra Guitars is trying to do is to try to breathe a little bit of life into the cigar box guitar and shine some light onto it, because it is an older instrument that a lot of people don't even know existed.
Okay, yeah. Well, now let's go back to a little bit more demo. Let's do something on the three string that you could enhance further on the four string, or just talk us through what you're doing, whatever you happen to be.
Yeah, so this is our four string model here.
Okay.
And acoustically, it has a built-in resonator cone. I don't know if you could, that's coming through, but you can,
it's coming through nicely.
Yeah, it's an aluminum cone similar to a Dobro-style mm-hmm. guitar that's really popular in country music.
Okay.
It gives it this banjo-esque quality to it. But there is a pickup in this one as well. And so this is a four-string that's tuned to an open G, but it has the B available to you. So more chordal options are available.
That's amazing. Just to hear this, you know, if I take myself away for a moment from the fact that I'm not listening to a traditional banjo or guitar or what have you, that these are old cigar boxes. You're playing the one of the signature ones, a manufactured cigar box. Wow. Okay, so that was the four string. And that was close to the same tuning as the three string, only with
Higher B string.
Okay, so that gives you then more chords. And then going to the six string, that is just as close to a standard guitar as you could get to, just beyond the fact that it's six strings.
Yes, and like you said before, even if it wasn't your main guitar, if mm-hmm. you're performing, I believe it's just such a great like standout piece for a featured song, where you could pull it out in the middle of a set and it just catches the eye. It's a great conversation starter after the show for people to be like, what is that? What was that that you played? It looked like a guitar, but what is that?
I don't know when the first time I saw it was. I did expect, there's a blues singer by the name of Janava Magnus, and she pulled one out in the middle of her set, and I had no idea about the tuning. I had to go talk to her afterwards because it seemed so simple with what she was doing, yet the sound,
sure.
It's amazing, I guess, because of that. We'd have to explain like chordal theory to really explain how it works, but let's go this way instead. What makes a good box to use for a guitar? Can you use the paper, the pressed paper,
yes,
cardboard
absolutely.
Kind of stuff?
So the box itself does resonate, but essentially if you took the box away,
okay.
you would have somewhat of like a stick guitar. So okay. The mechanics involved don't really require the box. The box acts as a resonator, and it allows you to attach a pickup to it and hold, like, the volume knob and accessories and stuff like that.
It's a place for your stuff.
Place for your stuff and your body to hold on to, really.
Okay.
But if you took it away, the mechanics of the guitar is essentially just one long stick.
Hmm.
Les Paul kind of proved that when he, you know, made a solid body guitar.
Please.
Yeah, when he made a solid body guitar. Back in the day when jazz guitars, acoustic hollow body guitars were the only ones ever invented, Les Paul came up with a design that proved that all you need is this kind of centerpiece to go through the body and that the rest of the body of the guitar didn't really matter.
Wow. Okay. Again, that's amazing. So what else goes to making a good box?
Box, I definitely have made enough guitars to have tried all the types of boxes out there.
Mm-hmm.
And they all have their own unique quality to it. As far as a box that will maybe last longer, the wooden ones, you know, that have thicker bodies to it, thicker mm-hmm. sides to it, will definitely give you a little bit more longevity. I've kind of worked my way through some of the paper ones with a pick, you know.
Oh, sure. Yeah,
over time.
Yeah.
But they sound great. The paper boxes sound great, too.
Okay, let's look at it the other way. What makes a bad box?
It's a hard question
it's
to
not
answer.
Bad, it's just
yeah,
unique.
Yeah, exactly. And there's certain boxes that you can't use because of the size, obviously, and you can't.
Okay.
There's certain length that you'd need to build a guitar with. But every box pretty much has their own unique tone, and that's what's great about these one-of-a-kind models is that someone can bring their grandfather's cigar box to us, and we can make a guitar out of it.
So is the sky the limit then as far as what stringed instruments one could make with a cigar box? We mentioned the violin, so I'm picturing banjos and ukuleles.
Absolutely. Ukuleles. I've even made miniature battery-powered amps out of them, powered by a 9-volt, you know, matching sets where I'll take two of the same cigar box and make a guitar as well as a mini amp for it.
Oh, wow. Wow. And now this is just personally you've done this, or this is now Culebra
This is part of Culebra. Well, we don't have a production model available,
okay,
but we are open to doing the custom one-of-a-kind pieces.
And could somebody actually bring in, say their grandfather was this heavy cigar smoker, or they just loved Mark Twain, or whatever the case is, and they got one of Twain's boxes. They got one of their grandfather's boxes.
Absolutely. I recently made a guitar out of a cigar box that was for a gentleman's baby shower. When he had a boy, they had a box of cigars with his friends, and after they were done with the cigars, he sent it over, and I made a guitar out of it, and it's currently hanging up in their baby's bedroom.
Oh my gosh. Well, so much for me asking what the most unique one was. That's really cool. You mentioned a violin earlier, this old, old picture. So I did want to ask anyway about stringed instruments, which would typically be bowed. Like, well, we've got the violin. What about something big like a cello or something? What makes a cello beyond the size?
It is the size and the gauge of strings used, so to get a lower register in the spectrum of notes. Just like guitar versus bass, you know,
okay,
you have the lower end and the higher end. If there was a box big enough, I could make a cello.
Okay. And could part of that be faked just with larger strings, just like making, I suppose, a cigar box bass, and that's just the fatter gauge?
Yeah, absolutely. I've made cigar box basses before.
Okay. And is that really what differentiates, say, your guitar versus your bass versus it's really the size of the strings versus the banjo? Well, the banjo, there's extra stuff there, but
there's a little extra stuff with the banjo, but essentially that is what it is. Thicker strings will give you a lower tone, a lower note.
I want to talk about some of the guitars that I've seen you play for demos.
Okay.
And maybe what makes them different. You've picked a few that will really give very significantly different sounds. This four-string topic special, this one on the demo video, bouncing around in an alleyway. You've got this fuzzy, rocky blues, as loud and as distorted as if Angus or Pete had just stepped up there. So what makes this one different than, say, any of the others?
Well, when I do finish a one-of-a-kind piece, I do like to take some time to really play it and find where it's going to fit as far as genre of music and the style of song it wants to play. Like, the instrument, to me, kind of tells me that. And so that Tabaka Special, I plugged it in with a fuzz pedal, and I felt like it was at home.
Okay. Have you come across one, for example, say you maybe picked this one up, and you had some thin strings and giving it went with a different approach, and then found this would play perhaps better with a different type of string, so one box would be better?
With our models that we do make, the 3 and 4 string, we essentially build them the same. The only difference is the box, and we use the same gauge strings, same pickup. We have 2 different types of pickups, but we pretty much use the same ones across the board. And once we plug it in, it's kind of when we know what it's going to sound like.
Okay. There's another one that I want to ask you about, and that is, it's simply labeled on the video that folks can find, and again, this is simply at YouTube, and then go to Culebra Guitars. There's a 3-string resonator tuned to a GDG, and this one, we see a lot of slide guitar played on cigar box guitars, but this one you're doing a really wonderful fingerstyle work, reminiscent of William Ackerman or something like that. That
Thank
type
you.
Of playing, you're very welcome. So, again, is there something that makes this guitar different than the Tabak, other than, well, it's different brand cigar?
Yeah, the wood that was used to make that box is different. The addition of the resonator created certain tones that was kind of telling me to play in that kind of style when I plugged it in, and so it was a different approach for me when I created that video.
Okay. Folks can easily go to KulebraGuitars.com or go to YouTube and search for, you can just search for Sarvan Cigar Box. I tried this a little while ago.
Oh, wow, that works.
Yeah.
Okay.
You don't even have to worry about the last name, but okay. Facebook, Instagram, I've mentioned the website a bunch. Where else can people find you, follow you?
Facebook and Instagram, Culebra Guitars, that's C-U-L-E-B-R-A. But yeah, KulebraGuitars.com. Has all our videos, a full gallery of all the one-of-a-kind pieces that we've made. So if there's something that you see there that you like, we could do our best to find that box again and replicate the same style and look. But we also have a line of production models that we unveiled this year at the NAMM show in January.
Excellent. So of the models that Culebra Guitars offers right now, let's hear about what you have and what makes that one special or unique. Beyond the type of wood, I mean, you know, you've got the 6, you've got the 4.
Sure.
What do we have?
So we unveiled 2 models, and Culebra translates to snake in Spanish. And so our models are named after snakes. We have the Cobra, which in my eyes, I modeled after the Fender Telecaster, which is the number one solid body guitar, first one ever made. And so I used the maple neck on that, and we have a single coil pickup in it and a wider body because the Cobra has the wider neck.
Oh, okay. Nice.
And then our second model was the Rattler, which has this aluminum cone built in. It gives it that, like I said, dobro kind of tone that you get from banjo guitars or dobro guitars. And this one has the snakeskin headstock on it, and it uses also a different type of wood in the neck. So there's definitely some tonal differences between the 2 models.
Wow. And then if a person likes the Rattler, but they prefer a 3-string,
Yes, each model is available in a 3, 4, and 6-string format.
Nice. Okay. And again, I have to point out, in case somebody's coming into this late, wonderful story earlier about the unique cigar box that someone brought in. And so the company will do individual special orders.
Absolutely.
We should mention you are not solo in this company. There's a couple partners?
I have 3 partners. We're all managing partners. I'm basically head builder. So I've been teaching them how to build guitars over the last, 8 months now. But we're all managing partners. Our shop is in Upland, California, right off of Foothill and Monta Vista. We have a showroom. You can definitely stop by, try guitars out, see the process of how they're built, and come by and just ask questions if you need to.
Fantastic. Nice. All right. Well, gosh, Sarvan, thank you so much for coming in. This has been a blast.
Thank you for having me, David. I really appreciate it.
Music in Conversation with Sarvan Mangiat with Culebra Guitars. That's what we've been hearing about and what we are hearing. Now, the day that Sarvan and I spoke happened to be the same day that Dick Dale, the father of surf guitar, passed away. Sarvan hadn't heard the news yet when I asked him to improvise something that would be a tip of the hat to Dick Dale. Sarvan Mangit on one of the guitars he built. The company is Culebra Guitars, based out of Upland, with 3, 4, and 6-string cigar box guitars. CulebraGuitars.com for more. And with that, we wrap up another edition of KVC Arts. Thanks again to Sarvan Mangit. Thanks also to Carol Dixon with the Assistance League of San Bernardino. Here at KVCR, thanks to Lillian Vasquez, Rick Dulock, Sharina Wadd, Taylor Milliner, Andrew Caravella, and KVCR General Manager Tony Papa. Music beds and themes heard on KVC Arts generally composed and performed by Sean Longstreet, but this time it's all Sarvan. You can hear past KVC Arts programs via podcast at kvcrnews.org/arts. I'm David Fleming. Thanks especially to you for listening and for your support, which you can do any time of the year. Go to kvcrnews.org. And thanks again.